Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XSourceNX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. I'm here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're here with Damien. You can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Our number ones, because we were not here last week, we have three of them. We are going to do Kill or Be Killed. We are going to do Briggs Land. And we are going to do The Killer Inside Me. Our over-under for the week is going to be vigilante slash action movies, and then we're gonna do best thing ever, and we're gonna get out of your face for a minute till next week. Don't forget to check out reviewandroast.com, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast, and yeah, that's gonna be about that.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Kind of busy lads lately, which is why we've missed quite a few shows in the last few months, and we're also pressed for a little bit of time this evening. So we are going to jump right to the number ones. So we'll jump right into Briggs Land, which is by Gross.
Please stop doing that.
Brian Wood, Mac Chatter, Lee LaRue, Lurage,
Lee Harvey Oswald,
and Tula Lote.
No, she's not on.
She did the cover, though.
That's weird because her name's right here. But either way, it's Dark Horse number one, Briggs Land, Chris's pick. Chris will give you the story really quick.
Word. How should I put this lightly? I guess it has to deal with some upstate New York backwoods hillbilly deliverance militia kind of thing going on, as best as I could put it. I guess you get to you're kind of dropped into this backwoods family, the Briggs, in upstate New York. Papa Briggs is in the big house, and Mama Briggs just told him to go fuck off. So now, honestly, that's pretty much the gist.
Well, yeah, Papa Briggs is like, he runs the family business slash family gang.
We don't know what the family business is.
Right.
But I can imagine it's got to deal with prostitution, human trafficking, drugs.
Well, you know, since he's in prison for a very, very long time, Mama decides she's going to take it over. And,
yeah.
The one son is kind of behind her, and the other ones kind of don't seem like they are.
And Papa's like, no, bitch.
Yeah, it's a man.
Do what I say.
Right, exactly. Now, I don't know about you two, but I know Brian can back me up on this, but season two of Fargo.
Yeah, I was actually thinking Sons of Anarchy, East Coast Mountain, an East Coast Mountain version of Sons of Anarchy minus the motorcycles.
Misty Mountain Hop.
For me, it was just really similar to the
No, it definitely Fargo. They definitely had a bit of the Gerhardts about them, although way more racist.
Yes, they
were.
Well,
I can kind of see why AMC would pick it up then.
Because they wanted their own Fargo.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a show already.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, it's been picked up.
It's going to be.
Well, it's being developed. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get greenlit. But
why can't Amazon pick it up?
No, I think it is greenlit because that's how they market this book.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm actually okay with that because we all know far well from our Fargo Season 2 podcast that as much as it was awesome, there were a few things I didn't like, so maybe this can make up for the things I didn't like.
There was nothing not to like about Season 2 of Fargo.
Aliens.
Again, nothing not to like.
Aliens.
I maintain the aliens were a metaphor not necessarily to be taken literally.
Yes, a metaphor that everybody saw multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah, every...
Nothing.
We're going to talk about Fargo for a half hour.
No, we'll stay on Briggs Land.
Damien, I want to know where you stand on the Fargo alien thing.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was crazy.
But did you think it was literal or like...
No, I thought it was some sort of metaphor. I don't know what exactly it was a metaphor for, but some sort of life-changing thing that revolved around death.
I sort of took it as like these people in the... whatever the chaos, were the only ones that saw it, and it was so out of control and so out of the norm for that town that if they go outside and tell their friends, family, or just random passersby what happened, no one would buy it. That's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, and then there's the one at the beginning as well, too, which kind of starts the whole thing off.
Right. It'd be like if I went out in the woods and be like, oh my God, I just saw Bigfoot. Like, yeah, I think I saw Bigfoot. I may have actually seen Bigfoot, but who's going to believe me?
No one.
Exactly.
I just realized that there's a guy in here in this Briggsland that looks like Josh Brolin from No Country for Old Men.
They probably did that on purpose so they can try and cast him. You'd be perfect for this role.
It'd be like the Nick Fury, Sam Jackson thing.
Yeah, I mean, trying to find a nice way to put it. I liked it. I'm going to get number two, which I put my order in yesterday. So I'm going to pick it up. It's not that it's not well written. It just seems like kind of like familiar territory or familiar ground.
Yeah, it's like, you know, definitely got the Fargo thing. It's also got a Sopranos vibe to it.
Right, you're right. It's not that it's not good. It's just
familiar.
I liked it. I really thought. It's funny you said it was a show. I didn't realize it was, but I said, you know, they're totally. This is going to be like the separatist militia Sopranos. Like, mafia is no longer, you know, scary or interesting.
Right.
We're all scared of white supremacists.
It's back. Yeah, it's backwoods.
I mean, there's been enough of this stuff in the news.
The Briggs family is totally down with Trump. they're totally voting for him.
So I'm thinking Trump's not racist enough for him, for them.
Probably not.
But yeah, there's been a lot of this sort of, like you said, kind of separatist crime stuff for the last few years with Sons of Anarchy, Justified, Fargo, so on and so forth.
Now it seems like comic books are going to tap into that now.
You know, there's
on this tip. Did you just, sorry to deviate for 1 second before I forget. Did you guys see Green Room?
No. I mean, I know what it is. I haven't seen it, though.
You should see that. That's all.
That's that movie with Patrick Stewart?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been told quite a bit about that.
I love the guy's first movie so much, that Blue Ruin. That was like one of my favorite movies of that year. This one is a lot of fun. It's not as good, I think, as Blue Ruin, but it's a blast. And the fact they're like a kind of a political punk band from D.C. that should drive around a shitty van really resonates with me.
I can see that.
Uh-huh. I still feel like I've had worse shows than this they did, though. But I'm sorry. Go on.
I was just saying there's also that new biker show on WGN America, whatever. I forget what it's called. Underground or whatever. No, there's like WGN America is like their version of FX, and they've got that Underground show. There's that show Salem, and then there's that new biker show, and then supposedly Scalp is going to be on there when that gets made.
Oh, that'd be cool. I like Scalp.
I've never read it, but I probably should.
Yeah, I read the first trade. That's it, and I thought it was had a couple issues, but that was quite good.
All right, so if we have any final thoughts on this, or do we number it and move? What are we all thinking here?
Yeah, we can number it. I definitely think this is going to be. I mean, now that I know it's going to be a show, then it totally makes sense. It's definitely like the character-driven, almost vaguely soap opera kind of vibe. But I'm probably going to keep going because I was. I was interested too. I love shit like this. I love these fucking assholes.
Does make for an interesting read. I really enjoyed it myself too.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, well drawn and paced nicely, just enough to kind of draw you in on a first issue, but not enough to fully know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of There's a lot of parallels to the Gerhardts. The Tellers, really the Bennetts from Justified, like really was like screaming in my head while I was reading this. Season two of Justified. What?
I said the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Sure, maybe. I don't know. I don't really know that much about them, but just the second season.
One of those family feuds.
They're famous for that, but I'm just speaking strictly of stuff that I've seen on TV, and season two of Justified. There's a family in there that really kind of takes center stage in that second season, and they were like prominently in my head while I was reading this. Plus, you know, I'm not going to lie, when Dickie Bennett went to prison, I was pretty much heartbroken, so.
Wow, he was so great.
Jeremy Davies?
Yeah, love that guy.
He was pretty awesome.
I like him every time he's in anything.
I have not seen
him.
Yeah,
no, that justifies. That's a good point. I didn't think about that. I could definitely see Raylan show up in the series and have it be like no big deal.
Right.
That would be how they could reboot Justified. Put him in Briggsland.
They should. They should do like 7 more seasons of that show.
You know, I tend to think that some shows run too long, but if they were to do that, I'd be like, yeah, you know, I'm fine with it. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
7 more? We're just going right for 7. I'm into it. Let's do it.
Well, why don't you start us off with a number there, Christopher?
I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Pretty much am going to agree with that. 7.5 is right around where I was. I'm definitely going to keep rating it.
Weird. I thought I would be a little lower. I'm actually giving this an 8. It's not quite as good as Starve for Brian Wood, but it's definitely better than The Black Road, so I'm going to go 8.
Yeah, definitely more reserved than Starve, which is fucking bananas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually wrote 8, too, so I guess I thought I was giving it a slightly lower score than maybe it'll deserve, but, I mean, I guess time will tell, because I'll definitely read whatever the first arc of this is going to be.
Well, I think my problem was is I read this a week ago, and I kind of brushed up a little bit today after I read the other two, but, like, it's... I just, you know, didn't have a lot of time
to reread
it again, I guess.
It reminded me of how I felt after watching the pilot episode of Sons of Anarchy. Like, I remember going, man, I really love this concept. The pilot's just good. It's not great. But the season went on, and the show got great, and then the show took a nosedive after the third or fourth season, so.
I've never watched an episode. Should I watch it?
I wouldn't, binge it, but, you know, I'd watch it.
It's a tough call. The first season is pretty close to perfect television. Second season, probably the same. Third season, it's a little slow, but it's got a huge payoff at the end. And then the fourth through seventh season is just like an excuse to make 3-hour episodes every week.
Yeah.
So they just do so much unnecessary. Like, there's 3 episodes with Tig deciding if he should get a goatee and mustache or if he should go for a full beard. It's like, what are you doing? And then the last season is this... just absolute bloodbath to the point where it's like nobody gets away with this. This is ridiculous. Come on. So, I mean, it totally just went off the rails. But, I mean, there are other people that just, they didn't care at that point because Jax Teller was going to be naked like every other episode and women loved it, so it didn't matter anymore. But the first 3 seasons are probably some of the best TV ever, I would say.
Okay.
After that...
I've always meant to.
After that, I'd say finish it just to finish it, but be prepared for one of the worst endings of all time.
Okay. I'm geared up now.
All right. Kill or be killed. Again, one of Christopher's picks. Seeing a pattern.
Yes, that is. My title's similar. I was like, wait, what are you doing? All right, never mind.
I don't... let's see. This one is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, which everyone is probably pretty familiar with at this point. Image, kill or be killed, number 1. Go for it.
9.5.
Do you want to give people a story, or... And that's a no.
You already said Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Is there even reason to go any further?
I mean, yes.
Brian, is there a reason to go any further when you say those two names?
I'll take it from here if you'd like.
You can go ahead and finish your peanut butter and jelly.
No, Brenda made me a grilled cheese with sautéed onions, avocado, and tomato in it.
Great. Kill or be killed, go.
I feel like this is everything that the Black Hood should have been. When I saw that this title was coming out, I was like, oh, you know, it's Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips. Yeah, I know it's going to be good. But part of me was thinking, like, how much more crime noir can you do? And then I read it, and then I just felt like an ignorant ass for even thinking that very thought. And there's plenty to do, and I don't know. Yeah, like, it's kill or be killed. It feels like it's the Black Hood, but I don't know. I like him better than the Black Hood. Granted, the Black Hood hasn't really I think it ended with issue 11. It's supposed to be coming back, but whatever. This guy is just... I feel so bad for him, man. He's got to watch his tool of fucking roommate Chad or Trent or Trey or whatever his name is. Basically, he's got to hear him fuck the girl that he's, like, I guess in love with. She's
by the way, his name is Mason. I love that you just gave him like random douchebag names. Chad or Trent or
But she's basically she kinda knows how he feels, but she's kinda like toying with him at the same time.
Does she know how he feels if he never told her is the point.
Well, that combined with you can't really, you know, slap a verdict on early 20-year-old hormones because you don't really think of others besides yourself a lot of times in those situations.
Anyway,
they're college age. You do stupid things.
Learn and be a person. Yes. No one's good at it at first.
Right.
But yeah, so. But he's almost at the point of being, like, suicidal.
Well, I mean, he tried to kill himself multiple times. I'd say he's past almost suicidal.
That's why
I
say he's at the point of suicidal. He didn't succeed.
Well, that was only because, you know, he got caught in the clotheslines. I won't say any more.
Well, yeah. he's like what's his name? Holland March? Is that his name?
Supposed to know what that
from
is.
From the Nice Guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Where he's like, I think I'm invincible.
So, I guess from that point,
it's an Edward Baker, Sean Phillips. It's a great book. I thought it was actually a really awesome story. Like I figured, like there wasn't really too much he could have done anymore. I guess with crime noir. I mean, he had the post World War II Hollywood crime noir and the fade out. He had Fatal. He's had Criminal, Incognito. What else? Sleepers. I really didn't think, like, in that realm, like, there'd be too much left for him to kind of, like, I guess, mess with in that, you know, in that genre. But with this one, I feel like I actually got educated and, like, I'm like, wow, I thought he came up with something really cool. And I mean, he kind of took some cues from, like, I feel like, I don't know, it reminds me a little bit of the Black Hood, only because he plays that vigilante role, but I actually am more interested in what's going on in his personal life than I am with that.
Well, I bet the story's going to have to unfold around there, because, I mean, him running around killing people is going to be, you know, is always exciting and stuff, but there's not too much more you can do with it, so you got to see how this is going to affect the rest of his life, because they definitely... you know, cued you into how he's dealing with the people around him, and you gotta see how this weird curse he has is gonna fuck with him.
Well, yeah, I was just gonna say we got a little brief synopsis of okay, he's in love with his best friend who is dating his roommate. He doesn't know how to handle it. He has multiple attempts on his life by himself, and they're all unsuccessful. The last time he tries, basically, he gets told that the only reason you're still alive is because I saved you, i.e. some demon he saw in the darkness. And he basically said, I saved you, so now you owe me a body. That's where we get the title. That's where you get the characters. That's where the story begins to unfold. He's like, did I really see that? What's going on? Do I really have to kill somebody? That was all in my head. Blobbity snorbity. Now we have the setup for the series of...
Bibbidi bobbidi boo.
Right. Bibbidi bobbidi boo. That's just... that's the scoops, yo. So that's
well,
basically
where... I'm trying to review it without giving away the story. I actually think the story is actually pretty solid.
I agree. I actually super enjoyed it, even more than Briggsland.
I know. I really enjoyed it. I sat down and was like, I was just like, man, like, every page I was turning, I was like, man, this is rules. Oh, dude, I feel sorry for this guy. What a fucking bitch.
So... Brian, Damien, thoughts?
But I almost feel like the whole... Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I almost feel like the whole killing people, having to kill someone, and the whole demon, like him having that, you know, brush with that demon, and, you know, him saving his life, I feel like that's almost secondary to what's actually going on.
Well, that's why I didn't say much else about the story. People are going to want to read it for themselves.
Like, I almost feel like that whole him being a vigilante is almost like... it's like hearsay. It's like it's kind of just there.
Well, he isn't anything at this point. We're getting there though.
Yeah, the demon thing that needs to, you know, collect once a month thing. I wondered exactly like if the demon's months are the same months as our months. Like, did they have like
special months? Demon like, months?
It's February. Does there? I don't know. I feel like there should be maybe a real clear schedule given out.
we don't know if Satan's calendar is quite the same.
Yeah, if the demon's like, oh, you know, there's only 3 months a year, right? He's like, no, there's like 12, dude. He's like, oh, wow.
I mean, they've never actually said it was Satan. Just said it was a demon.
You know. It's kind of a
given. Yeah, I like that. I like how Brubaker. He's like, he knows what he's good at. He does it really well. But I like that he continues to bend that genre.
Right.
Like you're saying, exactly. There is like the criminal's more just sort of like the kind of epic spanning crime story, and then yeah, the
like through generations,
like classic Hollywood era, and then you've got, you know, Fatale is like existential horror crime, and now this is more like kind of personal supernatural crime.
Damien actually summed it up best. That's exactly how I felt like I was reading it. I was like, before I was going into it, I was like, you know, I knew it was going to be good, but I was like, I'm like, how much more can you do with crime noir, honestly? And after I was done, I was like, dude, I was like, man, that dude's awesome.
I mean, he could do. I mean, now that I saw this, I was like, you know, he can do like space noir. He can do like medieval noir, like whatever he wants now. Like, fuck it.
Yeah, he's pretty much. Yeah, I would say that he's pretty much established himself as that person.
Well, like, what works for me with this book is what works for me with all of Ed Brubaker's stuff. Is he has this innate ability to take a character who should otherwise just be despised and make them three-dimensional, make you feel sorry for them, make you hate them, make you relate to them. You have all these different points where you're like, oh, I totally get that, and there's other parts like, what are you doing? And there's other parts where you're like, fuck, I'd be crushed if that happened. So like, he has this like really good ability to like make characters feel whole. And this is another example of that.
On that one.
And it's not just Dylan. It's the other characters as well. Not so much the roommate. The roommate's kind of just like a throwaway, like, annoyance. He's there to kind of drive Dylan's frustration in a way, along with the girl who he's in love with, but he can't really he can make out with her all day long, but he can't communicate how he feels about her. And that's part of what causes him to be just flustered and disjointed all the time.
They're always generally really tragic.
Right. It was like we were saying when we talked about that last issue of Criminal, where it's like it ended with Teague Lawless, this guy who's pretty much been the bull in the china shop the entire time. It ends with him in bed crying himself to sleep, which I was like, this is the most beautiful way to end this thing. Because here's this guy who is so like robotic in his violence and his motivations and his complete lack of empathy for anyone around him, and yet he's still, there's a piece of him left that's still kind of human. And that's what I love about Brubaker, is he's so good at that.
Yeah, the only time there's a character who seems really good is because you're seeing them through like an idealized version of one of the other characters' eyes.
Right.
Like everyone is wounded in his stories. I mean, a lot of times he, you know, writes from a male perspective, so the women seem like, I mean, like Chris was saying.
Yeah. No. I know that I shouldn't have said that, but yes, I was going to also say that. I said that to Brian actually after he had read Killer Be Killed. I noticed that within Criminal and Fatale and The Fade Out and this one, that he always has a female that's
like a foil for the male lead. And I think a lot of that is because these people in these books, in Brubaker books, everyone's sort of using each other. Right. Maybe not even knowingly. It's just everyone's always so damaged that they kind of use each other. And I mean, you know, men in the book use violence and use intimidation and, you know, betrayal to get what they want, and women use their sexuality and whatever other weapons they might have in their arsenal to get what they want. A lot of it, that's kind of pretty common for noir stories.
Right.
You know, the femme fatale, like she, I mean, women are, you know, obviously portrayed as physically weaker in these books, and the physical strength has a lot of power in these stories, but, you know, women are able to do a lot more with what they have than men can in certain ways. So I think he likes to show that off. But when you only see it from a male perspective, you do get kind of the female characters definitely get colored in an interesting way.
Well, and Fatale, now that you say that, I mean, Fatale, that I forgot her name, and I read it like 2 years ago, but I mean, that the main character was that, you know, whatever her name was, but she was able to pretty much make every man do what she wanted them to do. What she wanted him to do.
Well, yeah, so, she was kind of the, she was the lightning rod for the entire series, I mean, through right. different eras. But anyway, another thing that I loved about Kill or Be Killed was the backup material. There's a pretty lengthy essay, and it's actually longer if you go on the website Birth, Movies, Death, written by that guy Devin Faraci about the reasons why he loves the movie Death Wish and all of the social and political implications that the movie represents, like how it represents the time period of... A lot of his theory revolves around Death Wish is like kind of the rallying cry of white flight, which okay. I was like, I never would have saw that unless somebody pointed it out to me. And now that I see him basically spell it out in this lengthy and really detailed manner, I'm like, holy fuck, how did I not see that? Because his whole thing was like, in the early 70s, the cities were falling apart and they were turning into these like violent, drug-infested, urban decayed, you know, nightmares, according to, you know, what they would show you on the news and what people were moving out to the suburbs were telling everybody as they were leaving, like, oh, you got to get out of the city. And they're like, Paul Kersey was their idealized guy who was going to go back into the city and teach it a lesson by basically murdering whoever he felt like. So like, I read that. I'm like, these guys are fucking pros. I love this shit. Because, like, all the stuff that you hear about pulp and noir when it was coming to be was, this is trash, this is for poor people, this is just violence and sexuality and nudity and blah, 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 there's nothing to it. But you start reading about all these guys, why they wrote these sorts of stories, and it was all, like, being mentally damaged from World War and, you know, the onslaught of the Eisenhower era and then, of course, Vietnam and so on and so forth. All that stuff, like, played into all these stories, and it's, like, super interesting, and it's, like, I eat this stuff for breakfast willingly, and I'm like, more, I need more, I'll just do it all day.
I'll start on that note, did you guys watch that Blast of Silence movie yet?
I can't find it! I've tried! I've tried so hard to find it, I can't find it anywhere.
It's on Criterion, so if you have Hulu, you can watch it there.
I have to get Hulu, because...
I thought you had Hulu.
No, I did for like a month.
What's it called?
I think Blast of Silence, because the band is called Burst of Silence from the 90s, right?
Yes.
Yeah, is it Blast of Silence?
I did watch The Killing two nights ago, completely unrelated, except that movie is amazing. So
the movie's super good.
I would willingly watch that like three nights a week for the rest
of
my life.
It's that good.
It is that good.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it many times.
I haven't watched it in like 5 years, and I was like, I was just sitting around at work, and I'm like, I'm gonna go home and watch The Killing tonight, and it was the most amazing decision I've made in months, which doesn't say much about me, but it says a lot about how great that movie is.
Into it.
Okay, so Kill or Be Killed, numbers. Christopher, you want to go ahead and start again?
I said 9.5.
Sweet. How about you, Damien?
9.
Brian.
This is going to be my lowest score for Ed Brubaker of all time, so brace yourselves. 9.9.
Dork. I'll go in a 9 as well. It was really good, and I can't wait for the next.
Yeah, everything that Brian and Damien had said is pretty much, how that greatly summed up. Yeah, Brubaker, just to end on this note, he does have an awesome way of making you... feel something for the characters in those comics, and like I've said before, every time I read something of his, it's I just can't help it. I mean, this guy is like the king at writing comics for adults.
Yeah, it's great, and I'll tell anyone who is interested in this to definitely grab it and grab number 2 the day it comes out. My store sold for 75 in a weekend.
Wow,
for real?
Yeah, they say Killer Be Killed. Baker. Yeah, they say anything Brubaker, they order at least 75 of, and it's always gone by, like, the time the next shipment comes in. And then they have to wait for second printings, which is usually, like, a couple weeks sometimes, or even sometimes a month.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a shock at all, but at the same time, it kind of, like, that's a lot. Wow.
Yeah, actually.
definitely writes for an adult audience.
That was the first time that after reading, because I had to get it on my Kindle because they didn't have it at my shop either. I actually looked to see if I can subscribe on Amazon, but I didn't find a way to do that. So who knows? I know they bought Comixology, I believe. So maybe there's a way. I just haven't figured it out. So if I'm stupid and you know how to do it, tweet me at XorsonX.
I got number two sitting right here in my pile. I got to read it tonight.
I'll give you a pile. Speaking of pile, let's move on to Brian's pick. Jim Thompson's The Killer Inside Me. IDW. Go.
All right, before we get started.
Yes.
I was unclear that this was a comic we were going to read. I thought we were just talking about the book this week. So when I was like, yeah, I've read it. It's like, yeah, I've read the novel. Like, I didn't realize we were talking about the comic. So I actually don't have anything to say about this other than I did see the cover and it looked pretty cool. So go on. Okay. Pretend I'm not here.
All right, well. I won't get too long-winded about Jim Thompson because really, even though I've only got some familiarity, I would go on for a while. Anyway, I saw the movie about 4 or 5 years ago, the one with Casey Affleck, and I remember thinking, the story is great, I love everything about this, but I don't like him as the main character because I'm not buying him as the town sheriff slash psychotic murderer.
No, he was a weird choice. Weird choice.
Very, super weird. I feel like there's got to be some semblance of, look at the mug on that guy. And his face is too, like, chiseled. It feels like it's been molded by, I don't know.
It's getting weird. Keep going.
Yeah, well, he's such a, like... The 70s version has Stacy Keach, and he fits really well. Like, he does a good job.
He is a look at the mug on that guy, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, need,
young,
like,
young
a...
Stacy Keach is a good Lou Ford, but that was not a great movie either.
It wasn't?
It was okay. It was just, It also, from how much I love the book and how good the book is, it still, I feel, missed a lot of marks.
Hmm. Oh, also, Jessica Alba is beyond terrible, so I can't really appreciate much of anything she's involved in.
Yeah. Too pretty. Too pretty for the role. And I don't mean that in, like, a pejorative against who the character should be. It's just, I don't know, she may be a fine actress. I enjoyed myself a couple episodes of The Dark Angel. But Yeah, I don't know. That seems like a weird choice as well. Like, they got to start getting some, like, grittier people. Some people who have some, you know, real inner pain. Not someone who, you know, doesn't have to worry about ever having to park again to play these roles.
All right. That is a different way to put it than I would have, and definitely something I'm going to add to my toolbox for later.
I just came up with it.
That's pretty good for just coming up with it. All right. Killer Inside Me is the story of Sheriff Lou Ford from the Texas town Central City. I forget the slogan for the town, but it's kind of it's hinted at being kind of creepy. Something about, like, our grip is a little firmer, something like that, or where our hands grip a little tighter. That's, like, the town slogan. Basically, Lou Ford is your average, everyday, stunning, not really stunning, but, you know, handsome-ish local, you know, sheriff at the aw shucks and how you doing, ma'am? Like, that kind of guy. But behind closed doors, he's got some proclivities towards violence, murder, and I don't know. I guess you could say rape. Is that fair?
Well, sexual violence, maybe. Yeah, I don't know if specifically rape. But
well, there's one.
Like,
there's one panel in here that kind of made me feel like this guy's a little rapey.
He's certainly rapey. Yes.
He's a little rapey, but he. Again, he gives off this aura of, like, he's just, you know, he's a
good old boy.
A good old local boy, you know, done all right for himself. He's powered through the pain of losing his brother and having kind of a messed up childhood. And now he's, you know, protecting the town from evil. Except he is kind of the personification of evil. As he sometimes decides... And that's, the whole premise of the book is... He kind of almost blames the victims for why he is the way he is. Like, oh, if they weren't, like, begging me to murder them, I wouldn't have killed everybody. I don't know why everybody's, you know. But this is just the first issue. It's an adaptation of the novel, which I have not read yet. Now I need to. This kind of goes through just the setup of him meeting the local
prostitute
whose name escapes me. Joyce?
Yes.
Sounds familiar.
No. Forgot her name.
Something Lakeland.
Joyce Lakeland.
And then he's also got a girlfriend who is a school teacher that he
fucks on the side.
Well, you could say that about any of the women in the book, because it really doesn't have...
It's only been two women so far.
Right, but neither one of them...
The school teacher one, her name is Amy.
Okay. Anyway, the whole thing kind
well,
of...
Well, it is!
The whole thing kind of goes up to the point where he agrees to vouch for, protect the son of a local businessman who happened to be somewhat responsible for the murder of his brother. So, it kind of ends where he decides who he's going to take his revenge out on next, and then I won't say who, because there's more than one person. And, yeah, I mean, it's an adaptation, so it's not like a new story. I've already a bit familiar with it from the movie, although the comic is definitely different.
I felt like when I started reading it that I was walking into something that I had no idea. Like, I felt like I got plopped into the middle of something, basically.
I can agree with you on that one.
Okay, yeah, so that's... I don't know why, but, like, I'm reading it, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, why am I feeling like I'm, like, walking in the middle on someone's conversation?
Well, I can say, personally, not having read the book, not having seen the movies, this is my first introduction to the killer inside of me. It felt to me like Dexter, if Dexter was a Southern sheriff that, but, see, and here's the thing, he keeps talking about all this bad stuff. He never actually says that he just loves to kill people. And the only acts of violence you see are him beating this prostitute. And then when he's a kid, sexually assaulting a little girl. So to me, it felt like a very weird, like, this guy is, like, when you said rapey, that's the only vibe I got off of this guy. And it just really weirded me out for the whole book.
Yeah, because he's like...
Because it's the killer inside me, and he doesn't do any killing in the book. He doesn't talk about killing. He just talks about the bad things that people make me do, and it always seems to be sexually towards women, whether it's the prostitute now as an adult or the four-year-old when he was a kid. And to me, that was super creepy, and
not want to see it. And the fact that they actually had a picture drawn, because I was reading it, and it's making it sound like his brother Mike is the one that's all fucked up, and you get to that panel, and it's... his brother going, Lou, no. And I'm like, oh, it's him that's actually fucked up.
Right. And it was just, I mean, I understand it's supposed to, like, it'll probably straighten out later on. But I'm just kind of turned off the whole book at this point.
And then, like, the woman that's, like, waiting for him in his bedroom, it's like he's so turned off by it because it seems like any woman that throws herself at him, he's just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, I was so...
I want to be able to sexually, you know, molest you. Then I'll feel. Then I will get off on it.
I don't know. I was so almost disinterested. I didn't realize it was two different women until you guys mentioned that there was two different women.
Yeah.
I just thought the prostitute showed up into his bed.
She should marry him. He's like, hell no.
I thought that was all the same person. And it sounds terrible, well, but like, I don't know. Like, it was only a couple of pages in when it's like a panel of this little girl being molested, and I was completely checked out at that point.
Yeah, well, I saw that too. I was kind of like, is he killing her, or is he... And then I see his hand up her skirt, and I'm like, oh, right. Blah.
Yeah, it was a weird one for me.
I'm like, oh, that's 3-year-old. Great, because my son's 3 years old, and, I mean, not that that makes any difference. It's just I just don't want to get into it.
Right. I was hoping it wasn't that I wasn't the only one that was a little off put, but
I think any normal human being would be put off by it.
Well, I think the simple fact that, you know, Brian kind of knew what he was getting into, and he knows more about the background of these characters, it's probably a little different for him, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it reminded me of like a Nick Spencer book. There was a lot of dialogue.
It was, which was nice for, like, at first. It gave you a lot of information about the characters, about the background, but I just got a weird sexual Dexter out of it, set in the South.
With the, you know, with some racial Southern, you know...
charm?
Undertones of, you know, the, you know, I don't know if there was an N-word thrown in, but I know there was a Take Them All Back to Africa set in there, so...
Yeah.
I didn't get the idea of what year it is.
I want to say they said it was
2010.
1950 something.
The book was written in like the 40s or 50s.
I know.
Book, so.
Yeah. But anywho, I'll be done talking. So if you guys want to finish, or if you have any questions, or whether Damien, that's fine too.
Well, what did Brian? What did you give it a number? Or I mean, did you enjoy it? Or
I love Jim Thompson, and I do. I mean, this story is creepy as hell. But I mean,
oh yeah,
I was on board the minute I heard it was announced. So, I mean, I get the whole being turned off, but I don't actually remember that part from the movie. I don't think it was in the movie. Maybe it was referenced in the movie. I don't remember.
In the 2010 version, it was in the movie.
Oh, was it?
I looked it up on IMDb while you guys were talking.
Oh, okay. I'd have to read the novel to get the full breadth of what that scene means, other than just to illustrate like how completely damaged and without emotion this guy is.
So it's probably safe to say that Dexter is actually based off of this, because Dexter started killing when he was a kid too.
It very well could be. I mean,
it's interesting, but I don't think I will be going on unless somebody tells me that it's amazing. Then maybe I'll grab the trade.
Yeah, I can't recommend the book enough, but I don't. This does not. I'm not bummed that I didn't realize I was supposed to read this. It doesn't sound very good. I mean, the book, you'll read it in a weekend, maybe even a day.
Well, you're a little more familiar with, so it might not be that big of a, you know, it might resonate more with you than it did with me. I don't know. Maybe it's
possibly. I mean, it sounds like this as an adaptation might have the problem that a lot of adaptations have, where it makes an assumption that you are totally caught up, you know?
Right.
Like the guy writing it's just like, well, you know, we have to hit this point, right? And that point, and don't forget this part, we got to hit that. And then like they run the risk of overemphasizing certain things and underemphasizing other stuff. I mean, there's definitely a lot of sexual violence in the book. I mean, the book was written in 1952. It was not like that kind of stuff was not acceptable to right. talk about back then. So I think reading the book, you also, because Jim Thompson, just the way he writes, I think you're able to kind of keep it in that perspective as well. So it becomes a little more shocking when these things do happen. Yeah. But like the molestation and the sexual violence and stuff, it's a big part of him, but it's almost separate from the murderous part of him. Like the sexual stuff, I think, is kind of for his pleasure. And I feel like the murdering part of him is kind of just part of his instinct. He's like, well, you kill people, right? That's what we do. Like, it's just, he's just really, yeah, he is a very fucked up guy and a very dangerous person. But you're reading the book from this firsthand perspective, and it's just, it's really rich. I mean, you're not sympathetic for him ever, but it does have that kind of Dexter thing where occasionally you're like, oh no, you know, watch out. You're going to get caught for being a horrible piece of shit.
All right, so
yes, I'd recommend the book. I not having read the book or not the comic, sounds like it's probably not going to be recommended too strong from us.
Well, do you want to number the book while we number the comic?
Well, the artist did a very good job of making the guy look very rapey. Like
they did.
The book, I would definitely say, is like a 9.95. I mean, it's one of my favorite books. So it's like Stanley Kubrick's favorite book too. So I feel like it's not. I'm not being controversial by saying that. I mean, this is well known as being like one of the great American novels about murder and psychopaths.
Well, yeah, actually, Stephen King writes an extremely long essay at the end of this where he breaks down his thoughts on the book and why he feels it's as valid as Moby Dick or Mark Twain's novels. And he basically says that, you know, Jim Thompson didn't write this as like, oh, I'm going to write the grossest thing I can come up with. He wrote from this perspective of this post-World War II vision of America where, you know, these guys came back from war with this expectation of being, like, awarded this great middle-class life, and it didn't always work out for everybody. And, you know, he explains it a lot better than I did, but he kind of summed it up with, this was Jim Thompson's vision of hell.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, that's okay. And he was basically saying, at the time this was written, there were much tamer novels that you could get in trouble with the police for owning, let alone writing. And he was churning, and they were saying, like, a lot of the publishers that put these kind of books out, they gave you a hard deadline, like 2 weeks. Come up with something or forget it. And these guys got paid a flat fee to write a novel and get it out by And it was pretty much like, you want to be a writer? $50, have it to me in 2 weeks, or we'll go on to the next thing.
Yeah. I there's no Jim Thompson novel I don't think you should read. I've probably only read like 5 or 6, but each one has been fantastic. Heed the Thunder is amazing. He's come up with things that, like terms that we've used and we don't realize we use, like South of Heaven is a book of his.
Word.
he's just awesome. Like, no, there's some of his books are not really crime at all. The Heed the Thunder book is about like American manufacturing in the Midwest and the Communist Party, and it's just this like personal. It's almost like a Bukowski novel, where it's just this guy like kind of going through his day, and he's just painting this like perfect picture of what it would have been like in like, you know, 1952, 1953 in the Rust Belt, like trying to make it after being in World War II. A lot of post-World War II, you know, shit that people brought home before anything like PTSD or anything like that ever existed. Or, I mean, it existed, obviously, but until it was recognized.
Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah, anything of his is fantastic. I mean, there's definitely a few, like, I need to get drunk this week, I should write a book kind of books. And I've read a few of those. They're just, like, straight-up crime. And they're good. They're great. They don't stand out like Killer Inside Me or Heed the Thunder or any, like, they're just, I don't, there's nothing that's bad as far as I can tell so far. So I recommend getting in there. Now and on Earth, that's another great one.
I read a Hell of a Woman, which I loved, so.
Hell of a Woman, yeah, that one, yes, I read that one as well.
Yeah, that one was great. And again, so, yeah. Super violent.
Yeah, so anything of his, I'd give a 9 or a 10. Those books are fantastic. He's definitely, like, I mean, Henry Miller is probably my favorite writer of all time, and he is American, even though he's considered like a expatriate Parisian writer. But I'd say like Jim Thompson and Henry Miller are probably definitely like two favorite American authors of all time.
So there you go.
Sweet. There you go.
No, I mean, I've bookmarked the book, but the only thing that drives me nuts about that is to buy the book in paperback is $12, and to get it on Kindle is $10. Like, come on, man. Digital books shouldn't be no more than like $2.
A dollar.
Well, yeah. I've seen it at half price books, so
well, you know what I mean. There. I'm just saying, I can't put it on a half price books wish list. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to go read the book.
Mm-hmm. You'll dig it. It's great.
But like, I don't know if how the book starts off, like this, I mean, one did. Like when it starts, like when the, like I said, when I first started reading, I was like, it felt like I was being brought, like I was being brought into someone's conversation that had already been going on for the last 3 hours. I was like, okay.
Yeah. No,
what are you guys talking about?
Yeah. Well, let's number this and
So since Scott had the same feel, I guess I'm, you know, I'm not too far. I feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from this and get to other stuff. Brian, you want to number it?
I'm giving it an 8. I liked it. I knew what I was getting into. It was not like oh my God, I had no idea. I knew exactly what I was getting, so I'm giving this an 8. Yeah, and it's written by the guy who I just mentioned who did the Death Wish essay for Kill or Be Killed, yeah. Devin Faraci.
I'll probably spend the night here soon.
Bye. Sorry, my daughter's leaving.
Oh.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's fine.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, 8.
Yeah, it just weirded me out too much. I mean, the art's good. It was real heavy on the dialogue, which I like, but it was a little too weird for me. I'm maybe like a 4.
I'm going with a 7.5.
That's super weird.
Why?
You're like, I don't know, this book was not my thing. It was making me uncomfortable. 7.5.
Well, no, I understand where it's coming from. I mean...
So you want to kill people?
No. We all know that stuff exists, okay? We all know that there's lunatics out there, okay? So I'm actually surprised that you gave it a 4, to tell you the truth.
Hey, when I don't like something, I stand by it, son.
And I don't like that seeing that, you know, happen to kids, movie, any kind of, you know, form. But, I mean, it happens, you know, unfortunately, you know, beyond unfortunately.
Well, fortunately for the listeners, we're moving into over-under. And, woo! Like I have said, vigilante / revenge / action movies. And oddly enough, since we've been sitting here for the past hour, I've changed my picks. Because my original picks, I was kind of steering more towards the action side. But now I've tried to encompass the whole revenge / everything else just because why not? Overrated, I still feel that might get a little guff because I know people for some reason think this is such a great movie. And I tried to watch it. I watched it when I was younger, and I did. I liked it. It was good. But I tried to watch it again a few years ago, and I was like, this is probably one of the cheesiest movies I can.
Oh, no. You picked the same one I did. I know you did.
Uh-oh. I picked The Crow.
Yes, that was what I
For picked. Real?
Same exact reason.
Because a few years ago, I'm like, I just need a good movie. And I was like, man, I haven't seen that since I was a kid. Let me put this thing on. This is going to rock. And I'm like, this thing is terrible.
Come on.
Oh, my God.
The Brandon Lee Crow?
Yes. And I think the reason people hold it so high is because the guy actually died during the filming of the movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, sorry. The movie is god-awful.
I saw it once, like 14 years ago, with the girl I was dating. And she's like, you're going to love this movie. It's the greatest. And we watched it, and I'm like, this movie sucks. Why does everyone like this? And that was the only time I watched it. I've never had any inclination to watch it again.
Really? Because that guitar solo up on top of the church is pretty cool.
That sounds like the weird, awkward breakdancing part of any 80s movie.
God, that's so... It's like the craziest thing ever. I can't believe that I picked that.
It's like all of a sudden the lady from the flower shop is doing a headspin. What is going on? Oh, man, I thought you were going to pick one of mine. Which is why I have two.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, my original one has nothing to do with revenge as far as I know, because as far as I can remember, but action, I was going to go Top Gun, because I don't understand why that movie rules.
I think it was just Kenny Loggins was awesome in the 80s, so people were like, dude, danger zone.
He had a sweet mustache and beard.
Yeah.
Like, millions of people heard the phrase Need for Speed the first time in their life. They're like, yes, fuck yes, I totally have that too. You know?
Let me get my boat shoes.
I have Need for Speed, yeah!
I'm going to get my IROC-Z with my boat shoes, and I'm getting out of here.
Wow.
I'll put some Van Halen in the cassette deck. And all right, I have two then, so I'll run through these real quick. Well, at least the first one real quick. My backup pick was The Revenant, because that movie sucks, and I don't get it.
I didn't even think about that.
There was 2.5 hours of my life that felt like 4.5 weeks in prison, watching Leonardo DiCaprio eat raw meat and grunt, and I can't believe he won an Oscar for that movie. And I hate the guy that made it, so I hate that movie. I hate everything about it. But the actual pick, which was the pick I thought you were going to go with, was Drive.
I forgot that movie even exists.
I was so pumped to watch that. And I remember when I saw it, I was like, that's it? I mean, there was a couple of cool parts.
No.
The only cool part was the elevator and with that's the hammer, and that's about it.
That was the one part that I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. And I like
I love that movie.
What?
I totally love that movie.
Do you really?
I do.
There's like no dialogue.
I mean,
there's no dialogue whatsoever.
I don't need dialogue. It just needs to be good.
That Scorpion jacket rules.
Scorpion jacket does rule.
I don't know. I thought, too, and I had seen Bronson, and I remember liking that a lot. So I was like, oh, it's by the guy who made Bronson. It's got to be at least decent. But no, I didn't. And it's got a pretty good cast. Oscar Isaac's in it. Oscar Isaac's great in everything.
Speaking
even when it's
of that,
not good.
We just watched
Inside Llewyn Davis.
That movie was amazing.
Yeah,
that movie's so good.
Yeah.
I love it. I did not realize that's actually him singing. I was like, oh my God, he's amazing.
I know, right?
I was looking it up too afterwards. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he sang that stuff. And he did. And then it said, oh, in the 90s, he was in a ska band. I'm like, what? I'm like, I wish I didn't know. I'm like, I'm glad I didn't know that first, because then I would have just hated him automatically. And then
I
wouldn't know.
Talk about, like, bad focusing of his talents.
it said, like, sometime towards the end of the 90s, he started getting into acting.
He's quickly becoming one of those actors that is just top of the game, man. He's, like, crazy good.
I don't even think he is.
He's Juilliard trained. I mean, he's definitely, like, trained with the best in the city for the best actors in the world. So he's got the chops, you know?
Well, that's just it. I don't even think he's gotten anywhere close to his potential yet. That's how good I think he is. He's already, like, super good. And I think he's got so much more he's going to do before he really starts peaking.
Do you guys see Ex Machina?
Loved it.
Well, this guy's like, he wants to marry that movie. I liked it.
Dude, that was one of the first movies I reviewed for the site, and I gave it a 10 because it was amazing.
Yeah, God, what an ending.
And then the lady at work read it, her and her daughter read my review, and they wanted to see it, and they did, and they loved it.
Oh, they're going to say they hated it.
No. Dude, how can you trust humans ever again? Like, you never know anymore. Like, I don't believe anyone's really human anymore. I think you're really a robot.
I wish I was a robot.
Brian, he just moved his head and his neck whirred. What does that
I
mean?
Wish I was a robot that would transform into a jet.
Like Starscream?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
All right.
I was thinking more Skywarp or Thundercracker, but I mean...
Sick reference. Wow.
That is a sick reference. It's a deep cut.
What the hell are we talking about?
We're doing overrated.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So I guess it's Chris's turn, because mine is I've done mine, too.
So action or whatchamacallit or revenge characters?
Did you... I don't even know why I'm going to ask. Never mind.
All right, fine.
Movies. Action slash revenge.
Have you seen movies? Do you
I'm
like
say Keanu Reeves in The Matrix.
Was that? It was an action movie.
It was an action, definitely.
Yeah,
I mean, I like that movie. I think out of all the Matrix movies, that's my favorite one. But now when I watch it, it's just like...
I never understood why people love those movies so much.
I really like the first one because I saw it in the theater not having any idea what to expect. And, you know, when you first see that, like, when it comes out, it's like, holy shit, that was fucking awesome. Like,
yeah,
just,
it was.
at that point, I just got into, like, I'd been watching John Woo movies for a few years. And there's always that thing of, like, oh, American movies will never have that, like, intensity that, like, a John Woo movie has when it comes to gunfights. And then I saw that, and I was like, this is fucking great. Like, this is everything I want. And I remember being like, I'm kind of bummed that it's, like, this sort of, like, neo-goth hacker nonsense. But whatever, I'm okay with that. Like...
I mean, the premise is neat. Ugh. I mean, when I see a movie with Keanu Reeves, unless it's Bill and Ted's Excellent Something or Other, I'm not into it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like the guy as an actor. I'm sorry. Like, Mike was like, oh, we got to watch John Wick. It was actually pretty good. And I'm like, dude, that whole movie could have been solved with a phone call. Like, that was...
Yeah,
movie was just made no sense. It was dumb, and he has zero range.
Yeah, here, there's another one that could have been picked as overrated, because that was supposed to be Revenge.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a wet fart.
I like that one, too.
Wait, what?
I said I like that one, too.
John Wick?
Mm-hmm. I'm super excited for the next one.
I saw like 10 minutes of it before I fell asleep, so I have no frame of reference.
I mean, the action sequences and the fighting and all that is kind of cool, but like the whole story behind it is like, dude, you could have made a phone call and this all could have been cleared up, like...
Yep.
Just apologize, and you'd have been done. You know what I mean? Like, it was sweet. So did you want to try to come up with another one, or do you just want to stick with the Crow?
I think the Crow is. I really tried to focus on the revenge part of all these things. I think that's kind of more specific. So I was just like, well, that is definitely it. Because when that I will just to elaborate a little bit on the Crow. I will say that's another movie I saw in the theater. And when that came out, I was super excited because I had read the comics when I was a kid. And I don't remember them super well, to be honest. But I remember in the comics, there's a scene where, I think it's in the movie too, but it's done really poorly, of course, where the Crow guy is just kind of sitting there talking with one of the guys he has to kill. And it's a guy who like feels bad about having done it. Like he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to be there, but he did end up raping his girlfriend and was a part of the murder. But he's just been so broken up about it. And the whole issue of this comic is almost their conversation and the guy just being like, I get it. You have to do this. I'm completely okay with it. Like, I totally deserve this. Like, I'm just so sorry. And the Crow guy was like, I accept that. And I appreciate that. And then he kills him. And he's like, fuck, that was awesome. And it had this, like, emotional resonance to me. I hadn't seen anything like that before. Like, you know, someone who's clearly the bad guy, but still is like, who obviously, like, he's a bad guy, but he's also a victim. He's a victim of everything that got him to that point. But he still has to die because that's just the way it has to be. And I remember as a, you know, 12-year-old reading that and just being like, holy shit, this is fucking deep. Like, for a movie with a guy who wears corpse paint, like, or a book, you know, a guy who wears corpse paint and fucking kills people. Like, this is awesome. I didn't know what corpse paint was at the time, but... and then I saw the movie and I was like, this is fucking paper thin. Like, there's nothing here. Like, there's some okay... shooting stuff, I guess, and you know, Brandon Lee is a handsome guy, and you know, guitar solo was pretty sick, I'm not gonna lie, but no, the movie was just abysmal.
The one burnout that they had with them in their little gang was one dude that I wanted him to just die like 50 times over because he seemed like some motarded fucking degenerate.
Yeah, it's just it's.
He's the one that kept saying with like fire it up, fire it up.
Yeah, when you get like Hollywood people who have like the most fucking precious lives and they don't understand what like psychos are like or what it's like to actually have a gun in your face. Like people have never experienced that in their lives. Like to have them go through, have them like go in through and pick a movie and be like, no, I think to be crazy, you need to act more like this. It's like, no, you don't trust your opinions. Your opinions are terrible. You picked this director to make this movie, so you shouldn't trust anything you say. Like, so that was, I don't know, I just got, it was just such a, it was such a betrayal. Although The Crow 2, which I never saw, my friend Bill Cobe, did all of the paintings for that movie.
Nice.
And they were nice. He's a, he did some Vertigo titles back in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, right, he's a cool guy. He did, he was one of those, Bill Sienkiewicz, Baron Story, Dave McKean guys. So,
all right.
Anyway.
So, underrated. This one took me a minute, and then I was like, oh, why not just pick one of the greatest movies of all time? Gangs of New York. I feel like that movie is so good, and I feel like nobody has seen it.
You know, I avoided it for a long time because I had heard it wasn't very good, and I watched it, and I loved it. That was right. Great.
Bill the Butcher...
Yeah, dude, he's
is
awesome.
One of the most amazing characters. Well, it doesn't matter. Dude, Daniel Day-Lewis is... He probably is one of the greatest actors alive on the planet today, so...
I want to start a gang called the Confederacy of American Natives.
I'm not going to be part of that.
Good.
Now, the scene, though...
Trump will probably start retweeting your stuff.
The scene at the theater where
Bill the Butcher.
No. Amsterdam gets outed in front of everybody.
Right.
Maybe the most intense thing I had seen at that point. Maybe even ever. Where he's like yelling to the crowd, like, what do you want me to do to this guy? And they're like, cut out his heart. He's like, cut out his heart. He has no heart. I'm like, oh my God, I love this guy. I want to marry him.
It's like, man, he got off on a technicality.
But yeah. That movie was
I guess it actually was a revenge movie. I never thought of it that way, though. Dude, but, I mean, that whole movie was Amsterdam's attempt to avenge his father. So, yeah, duh. Yeah. Well, that's silly of me to not recognize that.
Derp.
All right, I have two again.
Hey, look at you.
Well, I picked two because I was like...
Chris Jr. over here.
Oh, I kept thinking there's going to be overlaps. I was like, I got to be prepared. All right, my first pick is probably a movie like almost no one has seen, but really should. Go out and see it, and that's Harry Brown with Michael Caine.
Oh yeah, that one was good.
Yeah, I never did see that. I wanted to, though.
It's pretty much like 79-80-year-old Michael Caine as Paul Kersey. He lives in these tenements in Britain. It's, you know, riddled with ruffians, and his friend gets murdered, so he decides he's gonna get a gun and he's gonna take care of business. I just love the fact that Michael Caine is super old and he goes to town in this movie. It's really great. Because I love Michael Caine, and it's, like, really charming to hear this man be like, tea and crumpets and bang, and shooting people or whatever the hell he says. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it, but he doesn't, like, talk like a typical badass. He talks like an old British man who just decides he's been pushed over the edge, and he starts killing everybody. My actual pick, though, is another one I'm not sure if a lot of people have seen, but if you haven't, you have to see it. And that's The Brave One with Jodie Foster.
No, never heard of it.
Jeez Louise. I saw that once, and that was it. But yeah, that movie was...
I fucking love that. I remember this girl I worked with. She's like, have you seen The Brave One? I'm like, I saw trailers. It just looked kind of like whatever movie I thought it sounded like. And she's like, oh my God, you got to see it. It's so good. And I was like, all right. So I rented it, and I remember I was like, blown away by it, and I think I went out the exact same day and bought the Blu-ray because I had put the movie back in the envelope for Netflix and went straight to Best Buy, bought it on Blu-ray. I'm like, I gotta own this movie. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's kind of, I mean, it's literally like NPR presents Death Wish. It's Death Wish flipped on its head because Jodie Foster is, she's like this meek, mild-mannered NPR radio host, and she, you know, she's dating the, like, Indian doctor, and they have this great apartment right in the village, and yada yada, they're walking through the park, and bad things happen, and then she's damaged and very upset, so she decides to take on an alter ego. It's so good.
That does sound good.
It is like, I was just like, I'm like, I like Jodie Foster, but I'm not really buying her as like this, you know, vigilante badass. And after seeing the movie, I'm like, I totally buy it as a vigilante Batman. If you cast her as Batman, I'm on board.
Awesome.
Yes, I highly recommend that movie.
I'm writing it down.
If you don't love it, I don't know. I'll have to buy you a PlayStation.
Oh, I hate it.
Not you.
Damn it.
This is a one offer only pseudo deal.
Damien, say you hate it.
Ah, I can't. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds great.
So. I'm just saying, if you want to play video games with us, you're going to need a PlayStation.
I know. Miles said I should wait till January when like the PS4 Pro comes out or whatever.
Yeah, it is coming out.
Miles Grab is now my landline to all things video game.
I guess. What's so special about the PS Pro?
I don't know. He's just like
different
he is,
processor
like,
and crap.
Apparently, it's like a little more powerful than the current one. And he says like it's gonna be $399. So
that's how much it was when I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think when my bonus goes through, which it comes in through in January, I think I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna bite the bullet.
I like it.
Yeah. Do it. You won't regret it.
You got something there?
Said, you add me to my. You add me to your network, and I go. I have no idea what that means, but thank you. That means you can play each other, right? That's the idea.
Well, you'll see play when he's on.
Okay.
Christopher,
my turn.
Yes.
Okay, I am picking a character, and I'm picking it only because of what she does to exact her revenge. Other than that, it's a movie that probably shouldn't have never been made, and it's a movie that a 13-year-old person should not see, which I did see when I was 13, unfortunately, and I try to put it in the back of my head, like try to like totally forget about that it ever existed, but anyways, the woman from I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be that one.
So did I. I just muted my microphone so I could yell at Brian what it was going to be.
How did you guys know?
Because I saw it at the same time you did.
No, yeah. Dude, we were way younger than 13.
Right, he's like a year older than me. I was 12 when I saw it, so
I don't know.
Yeah, and you've probably been trying to put it out of your mind ever since, too.
I don't actually think about it that often anymore, but I have absolutely...
I don't think about it every day, but I'm just saying...
just like every other day.
Woke up, made pancakes, thought about like... spit on your grave.
But yeah, I mean,
no, I was trying to think of a revenge character, and I couldn't think of anyone that like really... And then all of a sudden, the part popped into my head when she removes that guy's penis in the bathtub. I was like, dude.
Yeah, she revenged the shit out of those guys.
Yeah, and well-deserved, too.
Oh, yeah.
What she should have did is she should have taken his dick and stuck it in his, stabbed him in his ear with it, or stabbed him in his ass with it.
Wow.
But anyways,
a lot of violence.
Yeah, that is a pretty vile and gross movie.
Yeah, I've never had a desire to watch it again. So
no, I saw it that one time, and then that was it. And you know, like even when like I saw it then, it's like I might have been 13 or 12. I don't know. I can't really remember, but like. Even then, I was like, I don't even know what's going on. I knew what was going on, but I, you know, as I got older and I was like, oh, man, she was actually being raped.
Yeah, movies like that change you. It's like...
Yeah, it's something no person should actually see.
I will tell you, the reboot is not very good, but I watched that too.
Yeah, I just found out that there was a reboot, and I'm sure it's not going to be... as explicit as that one was.
It actually wasn't. No, it's you know, it's more visually violent, you know, because the effects are so much better nowadays.
Right.
And there is a couple things that she does that's pretty brutal, but yeah, but you know that penis thing.
Yeah. Well, have you seen the 78 one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Yeah. You know when I don't know, Brian, you know. When you mentioned that whole thing, I don't know what you were talking about. Maybe it was about that article that dude wrote in the back of Kill or Be Killed. You're talking about the late 70s and the whole urban decay thing. And I was just thinking about that when you said that. I was like, dude, you know what? When you think about it, like the late 70s, that just goes to – it just backs up a lot of things and when they came about. Like when you think of like punk, when did that really come about? Late 70s, right? Pretty much because of – how things were going on back then. A lot of those exploitation movies from around the 70s, too. Taxi Driver. There's a lot of fucked up shit going on in the 70s. I can't really remember because I was only four.
Well, and we only got a few minutes left here before Damien's got a scoot, so let's move this on to Damien's.
All right. I sort of have two. One of them's not really underrated because it got, you know, people seem to really love it, but I don't know if everyone's seen it. And the other one is probably not that great, but I love it. So I'll go with that one first. And that is Payback with Mel Gibson.
Okay, which one was that? Which one was that?
Well, it's a Parker. It's a Parker story.
Oh my God, we did watch that a while ago.
I don't remember which one it was.
It's not great, but
no.
Isn't Courtney Love in it?
No, Lucy Liu's in it. Well, Courtney Love might be in it, actually. It's been a long time since I saw it, but I remember when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be so shitty." And I didn't realize it was a Parker story. And halfway through, I go, "This is awesome!" And then, like near the end, I go, "This is really familiar." And I was like, "Oh, it's The Hunter." I was like, "That's awesome," because I didn't know. In my mind, like the Parker stuff was like totally separate. Like that never existed. No one else had ever heard of that stuff. Of course, Darwin Cook's graphic novel versions of are the best of those stories ever. But that was one movie that, like I said, not very good. But totally enjoyed it when I saw it and was really surprised how much fun it was.
I've only seen it the one time, and I'm just like, I'm not buying Mel Gibson as Parker. I'm just not. Even though his name was like Porter or something in the movie.
Yeah, it was Porter.
Yeah. And there's like Lucy Liu like runs like the mob, like the Chinese mob or something. It's like, doesn't make any sense. But it's, it was, not very good. But like tons of fun, especially if you didn't, again, if you knew it was going to be a Parker story, I think that would probably make it not so good. Like not having any clue what I was getting into, I was pleasantly surprised. Have they made a decent Parker movie yet? Have they done that?
The last attempt was the Jason Statham one, which I heard was about the worst thing ever.
Okay.
And it was like one of those things, like it came out when I was still in my everything Jason Statham does rules, like umbrella.
You Crank.
Yeah, it was like late 2000s going into the like 2010s where I was still like, no, Jason Statham is still the greatest. So when I saw the announcement, I was just like, oh yeah, that's a perfect casting. And then actually, as I started reading the novels, I was like, oh God, that's a really bad idea. Who came up with that? Jason Statham as Parker? I don't know who could play Parker at this point, but definitely.
I think it would have to be a no-name person, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely
you can't. You can't have any baggage attached to it.
So I'm perfect.
No. You would be great.
I mean, I heard a rumor on a podcast like 2 months ago that there's talk of a Parker television series coming down the pike, but I mean, that's all I've
Parker
heard.
Lewis?
Now you're talking. Parker Lewis getting revenge on the woman who betrayed him. with Scoob or whatever. isn't that his name? I can't remember.
I don't
the
know.
Guy, the guy, who, later on, the guy who was later on ER. He's like the big goofy guy.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. Anyway. Well, anyway, so I could talk about Parker all night, but just to go on my other one real quick that I actually was thinking was you reminding me of when you started talking about Spit on Your Grave was Hard Candy. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Ooh, yes, with Ellen Page.
Yeah, Ellen
and
Page.
And Night Owl.
That guy. Yeah. Exactly, Night Owl.
That was good.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
That was great, actually, yeah.
I don't, like I said, I don't think it's underrated. I think everyone who saw it loved it, but I don't know how many people actually saw it. Like,
for a movie that had literally three people in it, it was pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they filmed the entirety of the movie inside of a house. I mean, they didn't go anywhere. They didn't really do anything.
Yeah, it's basically a play, like a one-room play.
Yeah.
It's great. It's super great and a wonderful revenge movie.
Yeah, actually.
And that ending is fantastic.
Oddly, yeah. The ending is really good. Oddly enough, I recommended it to my mother, and she loved it. She's like, oh my God, it was like the greatest movie ever. I'm like, oh my God, my mom hates everything. And she liked Hard Candy.
There you go. Your mom's pretty cool.
My mom has terrible taste in movies, but for some reason she thought this movie was fantastic.
I feel like I have to watch it now.
Oh, it's good.
Well, I like Ellen Page, so I mean, if you like her, then it's definitely at least worth a watch.
Yeah, that lady can act. She's got some chops on her.
Yeah, that's why she's going to be in the new Enter the Dragon reboot.
What?
Some literal chops. No, I'm kidding.
You are totally kidding?
I am totally kidding. If they reboot Enter the Dragon, I'm done. I'm leaving planet Earth. That's illegal.
I was like, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it. You got to, like, go crazy, and that would be a great way to do it. Actually, but then you don't need, you don't need to.
No, I definitely don't. Unless Chon Saxon's still alive and can still throw down some moves, I'm not interested.
Alrighty. That's going to wrap up Over Under, so we'll move on to Best Thing Ever. You still got a few minutes, correct?
Yeah, I got a couple minutes.
All right. Best Thing Ever, I don't know if, maybe we're going to have the same one here. I don't know, but last Friday, I don't know why it was on a Friday this year, but Oddball Comedy Fest came through Chicago, and we got Skybox tickets. Yay.
Put your shoes on, baby. We're going to go to the movie.
And, I mean, it didn't have as big of headliners as it had, they've had in previous years, and the side stage did not get hosted by Brody Stevens, which was a total bummer. But overall, the majority of the comedians were funnier than I had hoped. So I have to say I had a blast. And Skybox for $30 was a kind of awesome deal.
John Mulaney was hilarious.
Yep.
Sebastian Maniscalco was decent.
He's
Tom Segura
back.
Was hilarious. And
he's doing two nights at the Chicago Theater. $70 a ticket.
I don't have $70 for that.
Yeah, guess who's not going to that?
All right. It actually came to me last night, and it is the Patton Oswalt Martin Shkreli war on Twitter, which has been amazing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I'm starting to wonder if Martin Shkreli's like, is this whole thing like performance art? Like, is he actually a genius? But no, I don't think that's the case.
No, I think he's just a complete, I don't even know what to say. And the fact that Chris Evans, for those who may not know for whatever weird reason, plays Captain America, tweeted that reading the Patton Oswalt Martin Shkreli back and forth was his favorite thing of the day. And then Martin Shkreli not only responded, but challenged Chris Evans to a fight through Periscope. What? I don't know how it started, but it is so good. Because he's trying so hard to like make Patton Oswalt angry, and he's just like, bloop, 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 and just completely like batting this guy around in like the best of ways. And this idiot is so relentless, he won't stop, which makes it so good for me to watch, because it's like, oh my god, this is really happening. It's one of the best uses of Twitter I've seen so far.
I am not versed in this at all.
There'll be some articles where you can probably see the best of. It's pretty good.
I'm into it. Christopher?
I got a new car.
Really?
Hey,
nice.
3 weeks ago. It's a new used car.
Hey, new to you is new to you. What'd you get?
I got an Acura TSX Sport Wagon. Sports Wagon? Yeah.
Has it got wood paneling?
No, I wish.
That'd be dope. That'd
be sweet.
Yeah, right? Oh, jeez.
It's a, as Brian called it, would you call it a mom car?
It's totally a mom car. It's not a bad, I'm not insulting it at all. I'm just saying. It's a good mom vehicle. Scott used to have
It's a family car.
Dude, I had the best family car when I graduated high school. I had a 1978 Ford LTD station wagon. It seated 10 people. Nice. That thing was like 18 feet long.
Did you have a rumble seat in the back?
I did.
Nice.
Well, it wasn't exactly, it was two seats that folded up. One on each side. You could fit like two small people on each side.
Oh, nice.
So it didn't fold up into a row. It folded up into like two side seats. It was weird.
My favorite time in that car, because it had the best stereo ever, I ordered a pizza, so I left to go get it. And all the way there, I'm going, man, this car is totally leaning to one side. Get the pizza, get it home, pull in the driveway, and I'm like, oh, that tire is totally flat. So I drove like 2.5 miles to get a pizza with this thing with a flat tire, and I just didn't think anything of it. I was just like, man, these tires are all fucked up. This car is fucked up.
That car was amazing. I love that car so much.
But I need my pizza.
Well, it didn't dawn on him that the reason I left the house without the car was because it had a flat fucking tire. But,
That's
hey.
Awesome.
Live and learn.
All
right, sir.
I'll do mine real quick, and then I got to bounce. I'm taking my daughter to go see Kubo and the Two Strings.
Ooh, I want to see that.
Yeah, it's going to be out of the theater shortly, but I really like those Leica movies, so see how this is.
All right.
Best thing ever, though, is I got my daughter Mice and Mystics board game for her birthday.
Nice.
And we've been playing it nonstop. That thing is so much fun.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like geared towards like younger kids. I mean, it starts 7 and up, but it's like totally cooperative. It's a good like gateway for, you know, other stuff. People basically said it's like Descent for kids.
Whoa, that's heavy.
Yeah, and it's cool. It's, like, intense. I mean, we get done with a chapter. It takes us, like, 2 hours to do a chapter. And we all look at each other like, whew, man. Like, that was something else.
Your 7-year-old daughter, like, she sits there for 2 hours solid like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome, because
totally,
my nephew
totally
will...
glued to it.
My nephew will not sit for longer than 10 minutes.
Well, you should give him a try this. It's got real basic math that she's good at. You know, she's like, oh, my moving bonus is 3. Oh, no, but with this I get a +1. You know, she's got all that stuff down, so... It's great. It's really cute to watch, and she's awesome at it. She controls like 2 characters at a time, and it's awesome.
That is awesome. I've always been curious about that game, but I've never played it.
It's super fun. I mean, it's like I said, it's definitely geared towards younger kids. But I mean, you can play it by yourself. You know, solely like if you wanted. I mean, it'd be kind of boring, I suppose. But as a grown up, I enjoy it quite a bit too. So it's a good gateway to make sure my kid's a nerd.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Maybe I'll get it for my nephew.
Oh, good.
Maybe I'll get my nephew that for Christmas or something.
It's like $70, but you should totally do it. It's great. It is when I went to the store to pick it up because I thought it was out of print, and I asked the place Card Kingdom at my house if they had it, and they're like, "Oh, we can order it." Great. And so they call me, and they're like, "It's in." I go down and pick it up. Like, yeah, $70-something after taxes.
Like, oh!
I was like, "Holy shit! Seriously." Like, I go, do you play, are the characters little, like, crumpled up $20 bills or something? Like
that? Yeah, I'll just take Candyland instead. What is that, 15?
Great. Yeah. But I'll tell you, it was absolutely worth it. Like, we've already got, like, 8 hours of play out of it. Wow. We're not even halfway through, so.
That rules.
And you can play different directions, different ways, different characters, and expansion packs, the whole thing, so. But anyway, we're going to miss our movie, so I'm going to bounce, guys.
All right.
Hey, have a good one.
All right, see ya.
I'll talk to you. Bye. All right, baby girl, let's do it.
All right, so that's going to wrap us up for the week. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can follow Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can follow Chris at SkateXEdge. And you can follow Damien at Damien Johnston. Don't forget to check out our Facebook, facebook.com/reviewandroast. And don't forget to go to comicroast.com and check out all of our podcasts. We got this show. We have... You may or may not like it, which lately is all DC Rebirth comics. We have a lot of interviews on there, and it's been a while since we've done a movie roast, but if you dig through, you'll find them, and we're hopefully going to be reviving that pretty soon here. So, have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week.